Time now for another installment in our occasional series, Here's the Thing, where Julian Clancy uncovers the stories behind objects on display in the Little Museum of Dublin. Tonight, he's taking us back to the early 1970s and recalling an important milestone in the struggle for reproductive rights in Ireland.
There's a great photograph hanging upstairs in the Little Museum of Dublin. It's of a group of women marching behind a banner that says Women's Liberation Movement. It was taken in Connolly Station in 1971 by Eddie Kelly for the Irish Times. These women had just taken a stand against the church and the state. They took what became known as the contraceptive train. But for Nell McCafferty, who's also in the shot, this photograph means something else.
When I see the photograph now of me behind that banner, all you can see is my wee face. Nobody else knows that the night before the contraceptive train, I was having a relationship with a woman and she broke it off. So when I look at that photograph, I say that's the day my heart was broken.
The photograph was taken nearly 50 years ago. And despite a broken heart, it still brings a smile to Nell's face over what was achieved that day.
Yeah, we changed history that day.
In 1971, Nell had just swapped the riots and the protests of Derry for a desk in the Irish Times in Dublin. There were few women journalists at the time, and their work was quite limited, as Nell found out in her first day in the office.
So I said, "Where do I sit?" And the deputy news editor said, "Go over there and sit there at the woman's desk, occupied by Maeve Binchy and Mary Maher." And I went over and sat down and said, "What am I doing here?" And they said, "You're doing fashion, cookery and babies." And I said, "I don't do fashion. I can't cook and I'm not having a baby. What am I doing here?" It was 4 days before anybody could think of something for me to write.
Nell eventually found her tribe with the Women's Liberation Movement. This was a group of extraordinary women who were determined to fight the inequality they faced every single day at home and at work. In 1971, if you were a woman in Ireland, it was illegal to own your own home or to get equal pay. If you had a violent partner, you couldn't get a restraining order against him, and you couldn't even refuse sex from your husband. However, the group decided to try and tackle one of the biggest issues facing the women of Ireland at the time.
To end what Nuala Fennell called the nightmare of unremitting pregnancy.
In 1971, the average family size was 12. But it was illegal in Ireland to buy contraceptives. But they were available in the north, so Nell came up with a plan to highlight the issue and to get the country talking.
It was coming up to International Media Day, and I came up with the idea of contraceptives, bringing them from the north to the south. And we all agreed, we'll do it.
That Saturday morning in May 1971, 49 women, including Nell McCafferty, boarded the train at Connolly Station and set off on a journey that they would never forget.
Set off we went to Belfast and came out at the railway station beside the Europa Hotel and straight across the road to a chemist. And I confidently went up to the counter and said to the chemist, "I'd like the contraceptive pill, please." He said, "Where's your prescription?" "What prescription?" "Imagine us looking for contraception. We didn't even know you needed a prescription."
As the cameras rolled, the women asked for ointments, creams and jelly, as well as a few condoms. But what they really needed to make a statement and grab the headlines was the pill.
And I came up with the idea of, we'll buy aspirin, dozens of them, because customs officers in those days, to get the recall, had never seen a contraceptive pill in their lives. Most doctors hadn't, most civilians hadn't. And we brought them down to Dublin and went up to the customs officers who were there, and they said, "Anything to declare?" We said, "Yes." "Maureen Johnson." "Boy, she's the kind of woman you'd go into war with her." "Oh, she's good." And Maureen went over and said, "Yes, this is contraceptive jelly." He said, "I'll have that, please." She said, "No, it's jelly for my belly, you're not having it." It was great. Whereupon we all stepped forward and waved our aspirins and said, "No, you're not getting them."
Beyond the customs gates at Connolly Station, a crowd of confused onlookers, supporters and the media had all gathered, eagerly waiting for word about what this was all about.
This is one of my big regrets of that day of the contraceptive train. I had written out the speech to be read when we got to Dublin, But I wanted it to look like we weren't all journalists, because most of the founder members were journalists, and we wanted to look like we were ordinary women. And I picked this woman, Colette O'Neill, to come and read out the speech. And I wrote myself out of history. God, it would have been a great photograph.
The contraceptive train was in the papers the next day, and the church labelled it as an insidious onslaught.
The next day I was read off the altar in Sligo. I consider that a great honour. I don't know why I wasn't frightened of the church. Most of us weren't. We just didn't care.
The actual photograph from that day is still up on the wall of the Little Museum of Dublin. For Nell, it's still a photograph that reminds her of that broken heart, but also of proudly stepping through the customs gates at Connolly Station and starting a conversation that would eventually change the country forever.
We could hear them all singing, "We Shall Overcome," and it was joyful.
Julian Clancy reporting there. He was speaking to Nell McCafferty about her memories of the contraceptive train on the 22nd of May 1971. Here's the Thing is funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with a television licence fee. I'm joined in studio by Jennifer Redmond, lecturer in 20th century Irish history at Maynooth University. The Irish Women's Liberation Movement, Jennifer, was kind of short-lived as a group. But given what we've just heard, was it influential in changing people's attitudes?
Oh, absolutely. That was a really powerful PR stunt. I mean, the women who organised it, Nell McCafferty said they're interested in journalism, working professionally as journalists. They knew the power that it would have. What it did was bring to kind of national attention something that had been happening on the ground for a couple of years. So the Irish Family Planning Association had actually been started 2 years before that. And they got around the legislation by giving away contraceptives, namely condoms, because as Nell found out, you still had to have a prescription for the pill. But they would take donations, and that got them around the laws of the land. So there had been people for a few years at that point trying to do something to break down moral objections and to point out the farcical nature of the law, but this stunt really did it.
They were fairly innocent times. I mean, the idea of not realising that you couldn't just walk into a chemist shop anywhere and get the pill without a prescription. Well, they were fairly innocent times.
Well, that just actually shows you the powerful nature of censorship at the time, because, I mean, we all know things like famous novels that have been censored, but also manuals or pamphlets that would describe in detail what a reproductive cycle was, how fertility really happened. Those kinds of things had not been in Ireland for decades at that point. So whatever people knew, how they knew it was probably quite unreliable. Passed on knowledge, maybe gleaned from some kind of international publication, but it was very poor in terms of openness.
But obviously their hearts were set on coming back with the dreaded pill that they could wave around. So it was a stroke of genius on somebody's part to actually think of, okay, let's just go back with aspirin and presumably take the wrappers off.
Yeah, they took them out of the packet and nobody knew the difference because nobody had seen them before.
Did they succeed in breaking taboos around contraception? They certainly got a debate going.
They certainly did. And I think they did break some taboos because the activists were on the Late Late Show, which was, as we all know, the big taboo-breaking forum. So I think they did. Now, it doesn't say that people suddenly became much more liberal or accepting. You still had another couple of years to go before there was any allowance, for example, for single parents. And even then, it was called something rather judgmental, unmarried mother's allowance, which I think tells you everything about the ideology of the time. But certainly that movement, although short-lived, did make people talk, rethink and reevaluate Irish society at the time.
Now, Mary Robinson wasn't on the train, but certainly it helped her campaign, didn't it?
Yes, and she was part of the movement, broadly speaking, and then obviously she was active with lawmakers in examining the legal prejudices against women, which, you know, ran the gamut from protections against domestic violence to, you know, selling property to contraceptives, including some really strange anomalies, like the legal domicile of a woman was where her husband was, but if they had separated or she didn't know where he was and he might have been in Thailand, that was her legal domicile. So they were pointing out the ways in which the law did not work any further. And Mary Robinson, of course, then became famous for taking on the state and taking it to the Supreme Court to actually allow for the importation of contraceptives if couples wanted to use them.
How long did it take for birth control to be deregulated, I suppose?
Yeah, so it happened in phases. So it actually took quite some time. The case happened a couple of years after the contraceptive train incident, but the government didn't respond with legislation.
This is the McGee case.
The McGee case, exactly. The legislation didn't come in until 1979, and it wasn't even straightforward then. It really was to preserve the life of women who were having, you know, these perennial pregnancies, and you still had obstacles then to overcome. Could you find a doctor who would actually write you the prescription? Could you find a pharmacist who would fulfill that prescription, etc.? So that was the first stage of it. At least it was on the statute books. But we actually had further rounds of legislation.
So this was the Irish solution to the Irish problem.
Yes,
that was
exactly. That's what Haughey talks about. Yeah. And it was. We could still prescribe the pill as a cycle regulator, in quotation marks, to, you know, unfortunate women. And then that joke came about that women had the most irregular cycles in Ireland than anywhere, if you were to believe the statistics. 48,000 or something by 1979 were actually using it, if we can have any true sense of it. But you still had quite a long period of time to go before the situation where now you can walk into a petrol station and buy condoms freely. You had quite a number of challenges to that. Don't forget, in between, we had the Eighth Amendment inserted into the Constitution. So there was great fear that these kind of legal steps would go even further.
You teach the history of the contraceptive train in different courses in Maynooth. How do students who would have been, most of your students now would have been born in or around the millennium, the turn of the century or turn of the millennium, how do they react to this?
Well, they love it, for a start. It is street theatre as it was described even at the time. They find it quite funny that, and this is on purpose, the women are very respectable looking. They are dressed nicely, but they're saying quite challenging things, including the famous, "No, you can't have my spermicidal jelly." They always laugh at that. But at the same time, they do find it quite shocking that at the same moment in time, you have a sweeping student revolution across the Western world. You have the second wave feminist movement, the civil rights movement, and here's Ireland, it's seemingly very backwards. So they respond very well to the activists teaching it at certain points over the last couple of years. They very much made the connection to the Eighth Amendment. And I think it's actually one of the best things on the RTE site, if I say so, in terms of the archival footage, because it just brings it to life wonderfully.
And how do they respond or how do they react to the fact that it wasn't until 2 years after the incidents that we're talking about that women no longer had to give up their jobs in the civil service when they got married?
Yeah, they find that incredible. They also find it incredible that even though it wasn't a law, in many private businesses became the culture, and it became the culture to such a serious extent that it seemed like it was the law. I mean, it was unchallenged. A lot of them would go back, actually, after learning what they've learned in the classroom and talk to their grandparents and ask them the question, well, what do you remember? Or what was your experience? And sure enough, they find, oh, yes, I had to leave my job. Now, there were sweeteners put in along the way. So, for example, from the civil service, you were given a marriage gratuity. So some women actually didn't mind so much because it helped them set up their new homes. It was a substantial amount of money. But the students themselves, they do wonder that that's an eternal question, I think, that historians pose. Why was Ireland so conservative for so long? And that actually intrigues them massively.
Does it interest them, the fact that that would not have changed in 1973 had it not been for the fact that we joined the European Economic Community?
Yeah, I'm very quick to tell them that, because I wouldn't like anyone to have the impression that suddenly we became, you know, radically liberal-minded overnight. Unless we were forced into it, I don't think it would have happened.
Jennifer Redmond, thanks for joining us this evening to talk about the contraceptive train in 1971 and the struggle for reproductive rights in this country.